Welcome to Small Business Big Network, the podcast for small business owners who want big results from their networking. I'm Liz Drury, a freelance voiceover artist who knows that if you're not working, then networking could help. Brian Clayton is the CEO of GreenPal, which has been described as being like the Uber of lawn care. Brian says he likes to add value first and then build relationships when networking. He's also very keen to network down with people who are a few steps behind him and network up with people who are a few steps ahead. Today's episode is kindly sponsored by Ella Stockdale at Humanity HR. You'll be hearing more about her services later in the episode. Thank you very much for being my guest on the podcast today, Brian.
Liz, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I'm sure people can tell straight away that you're not a Brit. Tell us where you are, Brian.
I am talking to you live from Nashville, Tennessee, in the good old US of A.
The home of country music, right?
That's right. Yep. We own the genre of country music and we're proud of it.
Fantastic. Now, you're currently the CEO of GreenPal, which we will explore in a bit. But I'm interested in your background first, Brian. What did you study at university and what did you want to be when you were a kid at school?
Yeah. Well, I was forced into entrepreneurship by my dad. He got tired of watching me play Nintendo all day. And he said, hey, I've got a gig for you. You're going to go mow the neighbor's yard. And he made me go cut the neighbor's grass. And luckily he did that because instantly I was hooked on owning my own business after that. The first thing I did was pass out a bunch of flyers and got five more customers and stuck with this little lawn mowing business all through high school and then all through college. I went to business school mm-hmm. at night and mowed grass during the day. And when I graduated business school, I had a little business on my hands. I had five employees and I was doing a few $100,000 a year in revenue. And I stuck with that lawn mowing business for around 15 years and grew it into a real company. So I guess when I was little, when I was young and a teenager, I knew that I wanted to be a business owner. I saw that as my lane. I wasn't particularly good at anything else. And so I guess I was lucky to find that out early. And I was lucky that my dad made me mow my first yard.
Yeah, absolutely. So was it kind of the taste of having your own money that made you think, you know, I'm gonna do more of this?
Exactly. It was exactly what it was because I was upset because I wanted a new pair of soccer cleats and this was 1995, I wanted a $100 pair of soccer cleats. And my parents weren't in the business of buying a $100 pair.
Yeah.
They bought the $20 pair. And so for me, going out and hustling up customers and taking care of them and just putting as much money in my pocket as I wanted just made sense to me. And then as I grew that business and grew it to 5, 10, 20 people, eventually built that business to about 150 people.
Wow.
I learned that it wasn't about me. It was about the people that depended on the business. It was about my stakeholders. It was about my employees. It was about my clients. So that's kind of the fun part about growing your own business. It starts out as this very kind of egocentric, kind of chip on your shoulder type of thing. At least it was for me. And then as time goes on, you unlock the next level where it's like, no, this is something bigger than me. This is more important than me. And that begins to be more rewarding and a lot of fun.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you went to business school in the evenings. Did you find that helpful?
You know, it was a weird thing because at the time, you know, and it's probably still today, still true today. I was learning stuff in business school and then running a business. And then I had this feeling of discontent that this stuff I'm learning is outdated. Mm. It doesn't apply. It's too theoretical. It applies to huge businesses, but it certainly doesn't apply to a small business. So I did learn a few things in college, but looking back, I could have gotten to where I am today without it. Mm. And I was actually talking to my nephew about this the other day because he's 17 years old and he's getting ready to figure out if he wants to go to college or not. And I just had to shoot him straight that, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily something you have to do these days.
No.
Especially if you're going to start your own business, just get in there, start putting in the reps and learn on the go. I think you can learn more in a weekend starting a business and getting five customers than you can in 5 years of business school.
Yeah. And I guess you were lucky really that you found something that you enjoyed doing straight away.
Yeah, I enjoyed I really kind of looked at my little service, home services business, my little lawn mowing business, as playing kind of Monopoly in a way. I would map out all of the neighborhoods, and then I would put dots on a map of where my customers were. And that was like a lot of fun to me. It was almost like a video game, and it was fun to see that grow and to be prosperous and have a little bit of success and see what that felt like. And still to this day, running GreenPal 20 years later, it's the same kind of thing. We have a map of the United States where all of our customers are, and we see where the density is. And it's a weird thing, but it's kind of the same.
Yeah. So that first business that you had, I guess that you're working fairly local to where you were living?
That's right, yeah. And I was very lucky to have been growing up in a place like Nashville, which was growing at the time. It still is. I mean, for the last 30, 40 years, Nashville has gone from a small kind of town to maybe top 15 largest cities in the United States. Mm. And so being a part of that growth, I was very lucky because new businesses were being opened, new apartment complexes, new office parks, new restaurants. So and all of these types of places needed my services and new neighborhoods and all of that stuff. They needed landscapers to install the trees, grass, shrubs, flowers, and needed somebody to take care of it. And so I guess you could say I had more shots on goal because of that prosperity. So I think where you live, where you grow up, and the vibrancy of that area is definitely important to your success.
Yeah. So you branched out from not just cutting lawns, but doing the whole landscaping and planting and stuff. How much did you know about plants and so on before you started? I'm guessing probably not a lot.
We're talking, this is 1999, 2000, 2001 was when I was first getting started. So you didn't really have YouTube University. You didn't have the internet. The internet existed, but there wasn't this abundance of information where you could self-teach yourself. These days, you can learn anything. You can learn anything on YouTube University. Heck, TikTok, you can learn anything. And so it's a lot easier to acquire the knowledge of what it is you're trying to do. Back then, none of that existed. So what did we have? We had a library where you could maybe read about different types of plants and what went where and how to do that. And then, but the big thing for me was the support and system from local suppliers, the guys that sold you the fertilizer, sold you the shrubbery, sold you the flowers. They were kind of boutique business operators, and so they kind of taught you how to do this stuff because they knew that if you were successful, that they would be successful. So it was kind of a partnership. So that's how I learned growing up, and a lot of trial and error. God bless my early customers. I screwed so many things up. But I think that particular thing is true no matter what you're doing in business. You have to put the reps in. And you have to figure it out as you go. It doesn't matter, you know, fast forward 20 years later, let's say you're running a boutique marketing agency and you've never ran a TikTok campaign. Well, you're going to have to screw some of those up and you're going to have to learn and put the reps in. And so that's kind of how I learned the landscaping business in those days. And honestly, the plants, trees, shrubs, grass, fertilizer, that was the easy part. The hard part was, how do I recruit a worker, an employee, train them, incentivize them, understand the personality dynamics, manage them, lead them. That stuff was much harder, and I had to learn that the same way by screwing it up and just figuring out the right way to do it.
Yeah. Do you think it helped that you were so young at the time and you kind of didn't know what you didn't know?
I think sometimes, the curse of experience and knowledge can limit you because you know, here I am, I'm 43 today. I was 20 back then when I first got started. So now that I'm 43, I have experience of, oh, that could never work because I tried it, it didn't work. So I wouldn't try that, right? But if you've never done it and you don't have that kind of, you're not jaded by past experiences, I think it can be an asset. It certainly was for me. And I did have a chip on my shoulder. I did want to prove to myself that I could build something that was successful and not huge, but big. I mean, you know, eventually it got to eight figures in revenue and it was a good local business in the Nashville area. And I wanted to prove to myself that I could do that. And so being young and almost naivete as an asset can definitely help. And it helped me when I started my second company, GreenPal. I'd never built a tech company before. And so that naivete was an asset. I didn't know how hard it was going to be. I think sometimes if you know how challenging things ultimately are going to be, you'll never do it. So that naivete can be beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. So you sold your first business, I think, back in 2013. Why did you decide to move on from that?
There's a couple reasons. At that time, I was 13, 14 years in. And one thing that was, I woke up one day and just decided that I was discontent because when you're building a small business and you're really throwing all of your weight into it, everything you got, you're putting into it. This interesting things happens. You evolve into a whole new person every year or two. You learn things that you never would have learned. You are solving problems you never would have solved, and you're growing from that experience. And you don't really understand or realize it at the time, at least I didn't, that that's rewarding and satisfying and fulfilling to you. And so for the first 10, 15 years, that's how it was with my first company. I was conquering new frontiers personally and growing, and that kind of plateaued about year 12. And then I spent 2 years kind of sideways from a personal development standpoint. And I didn't understand it, but I was just discontent. And I thought, well, maybe it's time to do the next thing. I don't know what that is, but I got to create the space to where I could do something else. And so then I thought, well, I go to these conferences for my industry and people are always giving keynotes about how they got their business acquired. Maybe I could do that. Mm. And there again, it was naivete as an asset. I didn't know how hard it was going to be to get that business acquired. And so I set out on the path to try to figure out how to do that. And then I started understanding, man, I have built this business as a great family-owned lifestyle business, but I have not built it to be acquired. And so then I had to reverse engineer all of that and take the business down to the studs and rebuild it to where it could be bought. And that was kind of another level of the game. And by the time I did all that, I almost didn't want to sell it because it was fulfilling and rewarding and challenging. But saw that through and shepherded that to a big national company that took it over. And then I took some time off and figured out what I wanted to do. And I thought, man, maybe I could be one of these, tech entrepreneurs running a tech business. It looked super easy in the movie The Social Network. Why can't I do that? And so there again, I was naive, but I had an idea that somebody was going to build an app that worked like Uber, but for lawn mowing services. And I knew the lawn mowing business, but I didn't know anything about the tech business. I figured I could learn that. And what I thought would take 2 or 3 years ultimately ended up taking 10, but recruited 2 co-founders and we started working on the idea of what would the Uber for lawn care look like. And now here we are 10 years in. GreenPal is a 10-year overnight success. We're nationwide in the United States with around 300,000 people using our app to get lawn mowing done.
That's fantastic. So tell me about how it works. So somebody wants someone to mow their lawn, they go onto GreenPal. What happens?
Yeah, so typically how if you own or rent a home, how you would do this, you've got vegetation outside, you got a lawn, you got grass, you got weeds, whatever it is, you got to mow it every week or two. Mm-hmm. And so you would go, maybe you would ask a friend or family member, or ask a neighbor. Maybe you would do an online search and find somebody on Facebook or Craigslist or something. And then you would dial for dollars. You would just call these people and then maybe they might give you an estimate. Maybe not. Maybe they show up. Maybe they don't. Maybe you're getting the best price. You don't really know. With GreenPal, you just download the app, you pop your address in, and then that is sent out to a dozen different lawn care services that are on the platform nearby you, and they take a look at your property and they say, okay, I can do it for 35. Another guy says, 42. Another guy says 27. And then you get these quotes and you get 5 quotes back in a couple minutes. And then you read the reviews that other people have to say about them and say, okay, I want to hire this guy or I want to hire this gal. And then you hire them right through the app. They come out and do it. And if you liked it, you just set it up for the whole season and you pay right through the app. And it just happens in the background. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
Sounds super simple.
Yeah, we try to make something that is typically a headache just as simple as pushing a button and getting it done.
Yeah. So is the app just available in the US? And if it is, can you see yourself expanding it elsewhere?
Absolutely. So yes, right now only in the United States, but we're getting to a point now where we haven't dominated the lawn mowing business in the United States yet, but we're getting to a point where we feel like we're ready to explore going international. So first would be Canada, then UK, then Australia. And then after we figure that out, maybe more. But yeah, eventually we will be in other countries.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming that you were the first company to offer this particular service. Have other people jumped on the bandwagon since?
Yeah, we were probably one of a couple in 2012 that came up with the idea. And what you find out when you have a new idea for something, pretty much 100% of the time, somebody else has already tried. Mm-hmm. So the idea is never where the value is. The value is always in, okay, how are you bringing that idea to life? What is the strategy? What is the execution? How are you getting the word out? How are you getting people to find out about it? How are you taking it from end to end in a way that nobody else is? And then going through like the trial and error process of figuring that out fast enough. So there were a couple, and then there was an interesting thing that happened in the United States from about 2012 to maybe 2018. This tidal wave of ideas of Uber for whatever. So mm-hmm. Uber for laundry service, Uber for home cleaning, Uber for lawn mowing, Uber for valet parking. A lot of these kind of ideas got a lot of venture funding mm-hmm. because the common thinking at the time was, well, Uber took over the world with ride sharing. This is the future. Everything is going to be, I push a button and I summon somebody to do this thing for me. And nine out of 10 of those ideas didn't take off mm-hmm. for a bunch of different reasons. And so there were about a dozen different Uber for lawn mowing companies that got funded. And most of them, well, pretty much all of them, kind of were trying to put rocket fuel in a Toyota Camry. It just never went anywhere. Like they took all the venture capital and they didn't have it figured out, and they spent all the money on Facebook ads and Google ads and kind of crashed and burned. And so we didn't take any outside funding, and we kind of just funded the business off of our own revenues. And so we quietly and like on a slow and low approach just built out the network, and so now it's us and maybe one other one that's kind of hanging on, but that's not, we don't really compete with them. Who we compete with is the status quo. Mm-hmm. You know, people still do this the old way. They still do it the hard way, and so that's who we're trying to get the word out to, like, hey, there's no reason to do this the hard way.
What's the hardest thing about being a small business owner? Do people problems keep you up at night, drain your joy and your resources? Meet Humanity HR, your independent HR support. We're not your typical HR service or employment advice line. We're your partner in success. We know that in order to grow, you need people, and yet nothing will drain a business of resources faster than a people problem. Imagine having a dedicated HR specialist to help you identify and prevent people problems so that you can focus on growing. From employment contracts that you can rely on to protect your business to advice on change in employment processes, we've got your back. But here's the game changer, our monthly retainer package. For March only, lock in 2023 prices for your 2024 plans. Flexible, affordable, and tailored to your needs. No long contracts, just expert hands-on support when you need it. Growing your business while nurturing your people with Humanity HR. Find us at www.humanityhr.co.uk. So let's have a chat about networking then and how you have built your network and how that has built your business. So what kind of networking have you done for your business?
You know, the first thing, so the first company, networking was a big like level up for me because back then, like I mentioned, we didn't have LinkedIn, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have, YouTube. There weren't the concept of an influencer didn't exist. And so if you wanted to learn from somebody who was doing what it was you were trying to do, the only way I knew to do it was to attend industry conferences.
Yeah.
So there were big regional industry conferences. And so I would go to these things, and they were super expensive to go to, at least for me at the time. And I would fly to them and take time off from the business. It was just so hard to do that. But I did it once a year, and I was exposed to all of these business owners in different parts of the country that were much more successful to me than me. Mm-hmm. And I got to see evidence that man, I could get there one day. And then you would hear, like I said, a talk from somebody who sold their business for $30 million. I thought, man, you know, that's the finish line. And mm-hmm. So just to be able to be around people who were doing what it was I wanted to do, was inspiring. It was validating. It showed me it could be done. And then at a tactical level, I could maybe connect with these folks and learn from them. And I did. So that's how it unfolded for me in the first business. So when I started the second company, GreenPal, I thought, okay, well, networking, man, that worked so well in the last company. I need to do that first. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I screwed up. So I spent maybe 3 or 4 or 5 months just trying to reach out to every single person I could in tech and in Nashville and Atlanta and the surrounding areas. And it was crickets. Like, nobody wanted to deal with me. Nobody wanted to talk to me. They saw me as kind of like a blue collar hick, which I was. and then I learned a hard lesson that when it comes to networking, like, you need to do interesting stuff, execute that, and then network. Like, it's not who you know, it's what you built. Mm-hmm. And so I learned the hard way that I needed to, like, put my head down and just sit in a windowless office for at least a year and grind something out, have something interesting, have something in the marketplace, have something with 100 customers, and then network. Because as it turns out, the people I was reaching out to, I would have wasted their time. They were running much bigger businesses or businesses in different sectors, and there was no overlap there. And so it took me a year to get some traction, and then I was able to network with, okay, well, who's building marketplaces that are similar to mine? Okay, here's a team that's building a dog walking marketplace. What can I learn from them, and mm-hmm. what can they learn from me? And then I was able to approach networking from how do I add value first?
Yeah.
And then try to build a relationship. And if something comes back my way, cool. And that's what I would do. And so I built out my network, particularly, like I mentioned, with other marketplace founders all over the United States. So are you building something that connects buyers and sellers in a digital way? Let's chat. Because maybe I've got some stuff that can help you, and maybe you got some stuff that can help me. So that was the interesting thing I learned as it relates to networking from my first company to my second.
Yeah, and is networking something that you still actively do now?
Yeah, I do it a couple different ways. I try to network down and I network up, and so what I mean by that is I've got a handful of founders that I'm always kind of just shooting the breeze with, coaching, mentoring, however you want to describe it, with helping them get from zero to one. Like, do they have 10 customers? Do they have 100 customers? And what are their challenges? I particularly know a lot about, I know a little bit to be dangerous about a lot of things, but I go deep on SEO and organic traffic. So I can mentor and coach people on that. And so I do. And so these are people who are trying to get where I'm at. And then I try to keep at least 2 or 3 founders that are at 9 figures, because that's where I'm trying to get now. I'm at 8 figures. I'm trying to get to 9. So at 9 figures of sales, they're running an e-commerce business or a marketplace business. And then how can I add value to them? And then how can I learn from them? And so I try to keep it small, 2 or 3 at a time. And I don't have any kind of like formal way to approach this, but a lot of it has come from a lot of it's come from podcast interviews, to be mm-hmm. honest. I've met a lot of people doing podcast interviews, and that helps me kind of meet people who are like-minded doing things like what I'm doing. And then cold outreach, you know, I'll listen to an interview with somebody who seems sharp, who has done what it is I'm trying to do, I'll reach out to them. I'll try to add value and I'll try to develop a relationship that way.
Yeah. No, I like that. The networking down and networking up. So you're helping people and then you're looking for people that you can that can help you. And I think that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, it's something that I have to hold myself accountable to do, because the problem is when you network down, you have to really screen out people who don't have any evidence of being serious about what it is they're mm-hmm. doing. And so I sound like a jerk, but like I'll get 20 people a day hit me up on LinkedIn or Instagram or something, and they just have an idea, and I have to say, hey, listen, get 5 customers and then let's chat.
Yeah.
And then you never hear back from them.
Yeah.
And so it's like that's a big signal for me. Do you have 10 customers? And if you do, then let's talk about what's going on with those 10 customers and how we can get that to 100.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thank you ever so much for sharing your story with us. It's been really fascinating. And to hear about how you're planning to take things forward into other countries as well. So I look forward to seeing GreenPal in the UK very soon.
Well, we will be, Liz. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me on your show.
And so my final question then, Brian, if people want to find out more about you and about GreenPal, what is the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, greenpal.com or GreenPal in the App Store or Play Store, or anybody want to hit me up, find me on LinkedIn or find me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Brian M. Clayton. I spend a lot of time there, and you can just drop me a DM there.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much, and the best of the luck with continuing to grow the business.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks for listening to Small Business Big Network. If you found this podcast useful, please do rate, review, and subscribe. And don't forget to share it with the rest of your network too.